All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Conditions and Maintenance of Certification Task Force. We are nearing the finish line here, so we'll go ahead and get started to continue our discussion of our draft recommendations. Quick roll call, Denise Webb.
Present.
Viraj Watwani.
Here.
Carolyn Peterson. Ken Kawamoto.
Here.
Sasha Termott.
Here.
Les Leonard and John Travis. Okay, hopefully the others will join us soon. I will turn it over to our co-chairs, Denise and Raj, to get us started.
Good morning. If we can just start with Kate giving a quick review of the charge that we're going to cover in our draft recommendations today.
Sure. So the charge for the Conditions of Certification Task Force is to provide recommendations on application programming interfaces, real-world testing, and attestations, conditions, and maintenance of certification requirements, updates to most of the 2015 edition Health IT certification criteria, changes to the ONC Health IT certification program, and deregulatory actions related to certification criteria and program requirements.
All right, great. Thank you. Do we want to bring up the Conditions and Maintenance of Certification Task Force draft recommendations document to walk through that? I think we need to hit the highlights. We sent a message out to all the task force members about some items that we need to resolve within our recommendations. Kate sent that out last Friday. And I did go in, not in this document, which I should have went.
Which one should I work from?
Well, we probably should work from the one that you prepared. I did make some changes, and I can just read them to the task force under real-world testing, because one item that we were discussing was around recommendation 8, I believe. Let me bring up my notes here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this had to do with testing the use of data and real-world testing. So I don't think I changed this in your actual letter, Kate. This
mm-hmm.
is the original Google Doc, but we would want to discuss this. This is what I'm proposing. I tried to edit this. I don't know if you want to go ahead and just accept it, since we carried over the original to the letter. Might be easier
mm-hmm.
to read.
Are we starting on recommendation 8 then?
Yep, unless I should ask, does anybody have anything before recommendation 8? I didn't think we, Raj, we didn't discuss, I believe, anything else on real world testing.
Right.
And I know Ken's on, and he wanted to add something. I didn't try to add his point. While the preamble, where it covered the estimates for real-world testing, it didn't consider the involvement of providers. But Ken had a comment in here related to not placing any undue burden or unfunded mandates on providers. Not sure how this would be handled and what we would recommend. And then I think Carolyn agreed with that. But if we could start with just the suggested change, what I'm suggesting is where use of data testing would be pertinent, and we're saying it that would be pertinent to the receipt of data in the EHR, And I changed this from we because there was a few places where we said we should do this or that, and we needed to specify who we was, which is the health IT developers here. So if the health IT developers are testing the use of data received through Exchange, that should be comma. The health IT developers should have the providers involved in the testing to validate providers can process and use that information. When certified health IT products receive foreign data, it needs to be presented in the same view as the native data to be useful and reduce burden on providers using the technology. The CMC task force recommends use of data testing validate the data a provider receives in the certified health IT be viewable, actionable, and reportable. That there's a typo there. It should just be singular reportable alongside the provider's native data. And then the providers were not considered in the cost estimates for real-world testing in the proposed rule preamble. And then at that point, I'm just wondering, Ken, what you might want to recommend there.
Maybe something along the lines of unfunded mandates that require provider effort should be avoided. I think there's a lot of talk about real-world testing, but another way to put it is it's rigorous evaluation potentially, and that's usually a pretty expensive endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I'm concerned about is, you know, after talking to a number of CIOs, is this was a big deal to them. They felt that that the focus has been just on getting data out of the system and sending it to other places, and no sufficient consideration given to validation and testing around the ability to use the data they received through Exchange, through the interoperability requirements. So it's sort of a balancing act. You know, on one hand, if we say, well, no unfunded mandates on the providers, yet the provider organizations are saying, we need this kind of testing done. So what is the balance on how that testing gets done?
Yeah.
And I know we have Sasha with, welcome back, Sasha, by the way. I know she's inserted a few words in here. Yeah, user.
I agree that
we are talking about the user. Thank you.
Test the use of incorporated data. I do think it's going to be any user, not just providers, so I put that language in. And I agree with Ken's concern that there was no effort estimated for involving users in type of testing, and it would be significant. We know that from doing other types of user-centric testing, like the safety and design testing that happens for other criteria. It's a pretty dramatic cost. So definitely it should be accounted for, and if it is expected, I agree with Ken, there should be some sort of, way in which that's not placing an undue burden on users who would participate. The one thing that I highlighted in here that I'd like to revisit is the mandate that foreign data needs to be presented in the same view. That's exactly the kind of, like, really definitive language that worries me, because I don't think we want to make that recommendation. If someone did a test that said in a particular use case it was more effective to present data alternatively, you would want people to design based on that user feedback and that usability testing, not based on this mandate.
Well, maybe we can word it differently to suggest that where appropriate it needs to be, because that was a major complaint of the users of the certified health IT products. I heard a resounding, and I'm getting a lot of this feedback from members of Chime, and plus I know, just using some of these technologies, having to go look for information elsewhere, to look at that information alongside your own information, like medications or like allergies. or, you know, those are examples.
So maybe I mean, I think Sasha is calling out a really good point here of potentially being overly prescriptive. So perhaps that language mm-hmm. say something about meeting users' needs in the context of use, because there may be times where you don't want you do want the foreign data to look different or be presented differently from the native data.
Yeah, that's a really great point tonight.
Clarification into if that maybe accomplishes what Raj and I were just suggesting.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, I like that. That looks good. Ken, Carolyn, are you good with that change? Or are you good? I mean, in general, are you all okay with this overall change to this recommendation?
Well, I still think that at the top, where just after it says recommendation eight, that we can strengthen that language. I thought there was a previous conversation that we had on this call about encouraging the testing of the use of information, and maybe that touches more on Ken's point and Sasha's point. But I think the way the first paragraph sort of reads there is that we're sort of saying some of this should be clarified, as opposed to coming out and saying we highly encourage the usability and human factors approach to testing the use of information.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That part needs to be changed too. You're correct, because that just says should provide, and we want to say that. Yeah. So, what should we change that first sentence, our opening sentence? Raj?
Yeah, I think we should. I had commented on the 4.2 version, so I'm just trying to pull that up to see what we could just take from there.
Oh, I think this still is the... Oh, you mean the CMC. Oh, yeah. Okay, gotcha. And then maybe we can cut and paste it over, Kate.
Yeah, I think it was just... Or, I mean, we could probably just as easily rewrite it, but I think I modified it to say... When testing the use of information, human factors and usability should be tested by assessing the ability for intended users to efficiently and effectively use the presented information. And then maybe we just modify that first sentence as well. So after the first sentence, we could add in there, we believe... rigorous testing of the use of information should be included, and then go into the consideration of human factors and usability.
Sorry, I didn't get the words exactly right.
All right, we may have, if everyone can mute their phones, I think there's a bit of a background noise.
And small point, but there's a typo in the second to last sentence where reportable has an S after it.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. I had mentioned that, but we missed that one.
Yeah, I think this is a balancing act, because we do want this kind of testing. It's just expensive. I think of like a study we're doing now where we're looking at, HIE data in Epic and this from the CCDs, and there's tons of differences between the providers, whether it's EHR vendors or just healthcare systems, of what they send, whether it's coded, whether they even send certain sections. And the question is, obviously those things should be fixed, but who would be responsible for doing it? And I would hate it if it's sort of the kind of thing where it's like, well, you need to get two informaticists in your health system assigned to work on this because it's now required. Ideal is, someone funds those two health informaticists to do that work, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Ken, I agree. I think when I think about doing this type of testing, I anticipate that a lot of the outcome is going to be around site-specific mapping and configuration. And so I would anticipate that if we did this type of testing, we'd end up with a lot of suggestions for Epic using organizations to say, hey, maybe you want to revisit these different things. Overall, I do think that could result in a lot of standardization and improvement, but it's certainly a fair amount of work for us to kind of design tests to look at that, and then for the organizations to implement any recommended changes that come out of it, if that means changing how they map certain workflows or capture certain data elements so that the interoperability experience is standardized and improved.
So Raj, did you want to change, because I know this is in the previous document, did you want to capture those other changes in that first paragraph that you had suggested?
I just had modified the third sentence there, but I think it reads fine as it stands now in the document.
Okay.
And then, you know, to Sasha and Ken's point, I completely agree. Like, I think this is something that's it's critical that we test this, because we've seen, heard so many challenges with this, and there's a lot of safety implications to this that can be associated with the usability and human factors components. Yes, it's expensive and difficult to do at scale. I'm not sure there's an alternative.
You know, and I know the CIOs are really, that represent these provider organizations, are really looking for, along the lines of what, rather than all of this site-specific mapping, they did acknowledge there's a lot of that going on. They want to get to the point where there is a standard way of data coming in and data going out and within the products. And I get it. Having been a CIO, I know a lot of times our organizations drive uniqueness that they want. And it's a balancing act for the health IT developers, because on one hand, you do have to have a degree of standardization. And on the other hand, there needs to be some modicum of flexibility. It's a challenging endeavor. So if everyone is good with this recommendation, because what we're trying to do is sort of get to the point where we can say by tomorrow afternoon's calls and that everybody's good with these recommendations and votes to move them forward to the task force to vote, to the full committee to vote on. So can we move on now on this one? Are we good?
Good with me.
Yeah,
I'm
good with it.
Okay. I know John joined us.
Tomorrow afternoon?
Pardon?
I don't see a call tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, I'm sorry, Friday afternoon.
Okay.
Friday afternoon. Oh. Yep.
Thank you.
And yes, I did.
All right. Okay, so I think the next, let me look at... the next one where we needed to do some refinement was around recommendation 17. So does the task force, do any of you have any other changes or anything you want to discuss between 8 and 17?
Maybe along the lines of the comment I had there, I wonder if we should say... we recommend something like ONC have flexibility to specify any specific subversions within Fire Release 4 or something like that, in case there's an errata release or something. If it's unstated, it goes without saying, but if there's like a 4.0.1 which has errata changes, I think they should be able to point to that.
I recall we talked about this. We were going to suggest them saying something in the preamble that while the regulatory text is suggesting, or is while the regulatory text is going to propose a particular release or releases, that what this means is that within that release that there's, what did you call them, subversions?
Yeah, I mean, yes. I would consider 4 to be the major version, and they have like dot.
Oh, minor dot version. F. Minor version.
Yeah.
Thoughts from the others on that?
So, are we adding something to the recommendation, or I guess I'm not
right. That's what this is. What Ken's recommending. We want to go ahead with our original recommendation that ONC should adopt solely fire release 4 in the final rule, in the regulatory text, and that we also want to recommend that it be clarified in the preamble that this would include any minor versions, that would be acceptable for health IT developers to adopt the current minor version of that release. I think that's what you're saying, right, Ken?
I think so. I think it might be implied, but
and we have Sasha and John on, so maybe they might help with the wording.
You're saying, Ken, that if ONC adopts release 4, then it's okay if different vendors do 4.1 versus 4.3.
No, I guess I'm saying like when they say release 4, so I'm thinking specifically of the example of release 3 where there was errata version that I think was like 3.0.1. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming most people are implementing 3.0.1 instead of 3 or 3.0.0. I'm saying I just want to make sure 4 doesn't imply it's 4.0.0, which has to be specified that if you know, by the time they're specifying this, there's a errata version, that we should obviously use the version that fixes those obvious errors.
Yeah. Okay, I agree. I guess,
yeah.
I think it would be unfortunate to use the standards version advancement process to that. So I guess what we're really saying is that ONC should adopt fire release 4 or a subsequent version if one is identified to fix errata in that version.
Yeah, that sounds
right.
Good.
If I'm not mistaken, they've done that before, so with other things.
And then we would take out this.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that
so obviously, Kate, on these ones that we're changing, you'll have to move them over to the letter.
Yeah, I'll update the letter, make that final before our call on Friday. So we can.
Okay.
If that works.
Okay. All right. Anything else on this? On 17. And let me just give everybody a chance. Was there anything before 17, but after 8, recommendation 8? Or are we good up to this point? I know, Sasha, you can probably see all of the comments. I reviewed them last night, but I can't flip between multiple screens here, so.
Yeah, I just arrived back last night, so I haven't had a chance to look through everything else, but I can do that. And
yeah, we have not changed, like, the things that we're hitting with the whole group today. These
okay.
are the things where we had discussion after we did the debrief from the HITAC. And the one thing I mentioned before we all got on the call this morning is that one area that we haven't concluded is around self-developers, whether we have a recommendation. I know we agreed that all of the conditions of certification and maintenance should apply to the self-developers, but I think we might have talked about saying something about that, but we can do that at the end. Okay, I think the next one... that we wanted to talk about was this one that doesn't have a number yet, and only to the extent that there's task force, because the folks that were on the task force call when we discussed this recommendation that Ken suggested, everybody was good with it, but we wanted to make sure that you were, and Carolyn put a comment in, and she, because I think she was not there on that call when we discussed this, and she says she's good with it. Sasha, we just want to make sure you're good with this, because I think you're the only other person that didn't get to weigh in on this unnumbered recommendation.
I would want to use the U.S. Corps implementation guide, so I agree, yes.
Okay. All right. Good. And then there's a comment below. Can you scroll? Let's see. Check on. That had something to do with John. What was that? John, did we address that?
I don't know why. I'm trying to catch up the reading. My computer crashed in the middle of things.
Don't agree to Argonaut Fire 4 that wouldn't exist. It has to be HL7.
Well, let me look back, because, yeah, I did get that. I was talking to our interoperability lead, and he had answered.
Oh, I think you were going to follow up just to make sure that when the Argonaut group advanced something.
Right, when was it going to be balloted? And he did answer that. I need to find that.
Yeah, I think I recall that email, and it said that they believed that was already advancing or going to advance that through that process, and that they believed that these changes would be within the HL7 specifications.
Yeah, I believe that was the point.
Yeah.
And then you'd ask, when are they balloting it? And I think he said in this next technical committee meeting cycle, and I'm just trying to find his response.
Right, because I think we were concerned about whether these would be actually, I mean, could people rely on what Argonaut's doing that's not yet in the specs for HL7, knowing that they are going to be, I mean, because obviously the health IT developers want to get, or already are working on this.
Yeah.
So the only reason I want to make sure we touch on all these comments is so Kate can remove them, and not, we don't want to carry those over into the letter. Just want to make sure we addressed it.
Yeah, he said Argonaut is not planning to have another implementation guide based on Fire Release 4 per se. Rather, Fire U.S. Corps will include and cover Argonaut. So HL7 will ballot HL7 Fire U.S. Corps. Argonaut might develop additional guidance, which then could be included in the next version, so it basically works as a feeder. So don't adopt something like Argonaut on Fire R4. It doesn't exist. It wouldn't go through a ballot.
Okay.
Seven,
so our recommendation.
Updated. Yeah, should stand.
So our recommendation.
And then I did ask. Go ahead. Sorry.
So it sounds like our recommendation addresses the concerns with using Argonaut in there. Okay. And then you were going to say the last point?
I believe the other question we had was, you know, when they may ballot next, and they are doing so in the May Technical Committee meeting series for HL7. So it'd be plenty timely. If there's anything right now outstanding, it would be plenty timely to a final rule. Should be through its balloting.
All right, good.
As a matter of fact, balloting is going on right now. The settling of the ballot result will happen, I think, in the May cycle.
So I think the final point we need to discuss on this particular recommendation relates to concerns, and I know Carolyn has surfaced it. A number of the CIOs that I've talked to have surfaced this concern around, you know, smaller companies, less resource-rich companies that have to come up to these standards. And I know we just briefly touched on this idea of, in terms of the time frame. So there's 2 years or 25 months to have all of this in place. And of course, we had some discussion about how much of that time goes to the developers versus the users of the technology. And did we want to make any recommendation around some waiver process to request additional time or legitimate reasons? Or do we want to stay away from that and just have one standard time frame?
Well, I think the waiver might be, if we don't become too prescriptive about that, I think that offers a pathway for discussion with ONC when organizations are in situations where this is a stretch or they just simply don't have the funds.
Maybe we could say in a recommendation that the CMC task force acknowledges that, moving to any new standard within a product could be a larger lift for some smaller health IT development companies, and then the subsequent adoption by their customers, and would suggest ONC consider some reasonable waiver or exception process on meeting the time frame specified in the rule?
I wouldn't say consider. I would say formulate something that's stronger than consider. Consider really means nothing.
Oh, should.
Them to do anything.
Should provide.
Yeah, that would be better.
What's the, I guess, just thinking through, and I think there's a big lift for many parties in what's proposed here. What's the consequence of some organizations taking advantage of the waiver, right? So, like, if a certain healthcare organization says, we aren't able to upgrade our systems in time to meet this deadline, then the practical impact of that is that their patients can't take advantage of applications, or their providers can't take advantage of applications that are written based on, fired 4.0.1 because they haven't upgraded their systems yet, right?
That can
right.
be an implication. Another one can be that additional fees get placed upon patients, that costs increase because the immediate budget for the next 2 years 3 years doesn't have a place to hold this upgrade and the subsequent costs for the developing company, as well as all the other things that the provider is mandated to ensure happen. I think, thinking about the budgeting process, things don't happen instantly, and just because a government agency comes along and says company Y has to do this new thing that we haven't talked about before, that doesn't magically cause dollars to appear in the bank. And providers have to make decisions about how to fund different things. And if they have too much that has to happen at once, if they're developing company that they're working with as well, we were told we have to do this, so we have to pass the cost on to you now. We can't spread it over a longer period. Then ultimately that all rolls down to patient. And for the patient purposes, while it's important to keep up with new technologies and keep advancing, that's absolutely a fair point. It's not necessarily the case that all patients feel a benefit from moving to the new standard or the new technology in a very short time frame. But
I wonder,
when they get bored,
I wholeheartedly,
then everybody has to pay.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I think I'm wondering though if a waiver is the best way to address that concern. The fear I have about waivers is it introduces an expectation and then an exception process, which complicates the process for everyone, because a patient or an app developer or another EHR can't rely on one of the assurances of certification, which is that any certified system will meet a certain technical standard. And that's tough, right? Because then if you want to interoperate with a system that has a waiver, it places a burden on everyone else to attempt to be backward compatible or to explain why interoperating with that other system isn't available. I wonder if a better approach to the concern that we're moving too quickly and increasing cost because we're exceeding the pace of reasonable adoption would simply be to suggest a different time frame or that a different time frame be evaluated to avoid that consequence. Because I think that the consequence of people being on different versions is also challenging to the industry. And I would want to avoid introducing that side consequence in the attempt to introduce the to mitigate the consequence of moving too quickly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I mean, I think that is potentially a solution. I certainly can't like seek to promote things that make it all more difficult. But if 2 years is the constraint, then that kind of creates its own problem.
So through our dialogue through the weeks, I think universally, I think we all agree that there is likely problems with the timeline, and I have, you know, listening to both of you, I absolutely have been thinking about this and agree that setting an exception for one group of folks creates complications and burdens on other groups within the ecosystem, and ultimately it raises the overall cost for everybody. So maybe we would be better served to recommend how this timeline gets broken up, how much time goes to health IT developers to get what they need to get done, and not specific just to this recommendation, but to all the changes that have to occur in the certified health IT, you know, the other 2015 edition updates, this particular standard. And I think, you know, I should ask Kate, do we have any more information related to what's in CMS's rule and when they're expecting the using organizations of the technology to actually have it in production use?
So not for each specific criteria, but at least for the EHI export and API. So in the ONC rule, like through the conditions which are on the developer, there's a requirement, obviously, to they have 24 months to provide that certification. And then on the provider end of it, it's also those two are included in the base EHR definition, which is 24 months, and then therefore they would be required within the cert definition, so, you know, be required to meet those to comply with the CMS requirements.
At the same time,
so I don't
time,
have it broken out
that,
by.
So what I think I hear you saying, the time that's provided in the ONC rule, I think I hear you saying that does include actual deployment and production use within the healthcare organization.
That's my understanding.
So in a sense, because they have to meet the base EHR definition, which is part of this included in the cert definition for CMS.
There might be a little bit of very mild wiggle room with that, depending on reporting period starts for whatever people need to do, but by and large, you know, kind of like this year, promoting interoperability is 90 days, but if you participate in CPC Plus, you're worried about start of year. So it's
you need to meet that definition by the time that your reporting period rolls around for whatever your interest is. And that's a complicated intersect, but conservative would be get it in place by the start of that calendar year, whatever that falls at. You know, you first require that cert definition to be met.
So you can see on the screen that Sasha put up a recommendation. Can you scroll up just a little bit, Sasha?
And before I forget, it's relevant to this. I don't know if we covered it already, but the e-prescribing situation, I think we need to fold into this, or if we're dealing with it in turn, I'll wait.
Right, and she mentions in here not just this fire, these fire updates, but the other changes, which would include the e-prescribing. One thing that I would say, though, you know, where you have particularly small developers and small practices, I'd agree with the particularly small developers, but actually, not only is it it's a huge lift for these large integrated healthcare delivery networks that have hundreds of sites that they have to deploy and train their, you know, users. So I think there's going to be a challenge, not just for small practices, but I think for large integrated healthcare delivery networks as well.
Yeah,
and that gets to the point Carolyn made about budgeting and scheduling these changes with then when you think about all the different clinical systems that a healthcare organization runs. I mean, this has to be fit in to their release cycle, their budget. It's not as simple as one may think. Okay, so I'm just reading the rest of the recommendation here. If everybody can take a look at this, providing waiver for those unable to adopt. I like that recommendation.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I think that offers guidance and brings up the point in a way that perhaps allows for some creative thinking on ONC's part and hopefully some other solution that we're not going to come up with in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah. Ken? And Les, I see you're on, Les. Is this good with you?
Yeah. I guess my only potential update would be beginning part of line 3 instead of is going to place, maybe say may place an unreasonable burden with the rest intact. I'm thinking like it might depend on when this regulation actually goes into force, because doesn't it say from the time this goes into force, and if it doesn't go into force for a long time, maybe, and it might end up being reasonable. It may not, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, that.
I agree with changing it to May. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Good. This was one of our major things to talk about. Let me see. Check that off our list.
We should have been using Google Docs like this all along. It's really helpful.
All right. So let's see. Where are we? Raj, do you know where the next item of discussion was? I see in the notes that went out to the task force members, recommendation XX added by Ken, guidance on compliance with privacy and security regulations. Which recommendation was that? Oh, there it is.
Between 19 and 20.
Yeah. We just want to make sure the whole task force is a new recommendation.
And I can explain it further if that'd be helpful.
So the folks that weren't on for the original discussion on this, further explanation, is that needed, or do you all understand what this is proposing?
I'm comfortable with it.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Me too.
Okay. Okay, so then, and I think, Len, you were on, Les, you were on that call with us, so I think we're good to move then? That recommendation is good, Kate. 22 was the next one. Oh, no. We have a comment on 20. So on this one, my point was we're saying that recommend ONC specify a standard approach, and my comment was just do we have a specific approach we want to propose? Or are we saying which is available in Fire Release 4 and that covers it?
I thought they said we want to use the version in Release 4, or did they not say that?
I think that was the intent. John, do you remember?
In terms of the way.
Maybe if we take the parentheses off the comment. So it's less than just a parenthetical.
Yeah,
and then that.
Yeah, I think our I think our point was this was a major argument for R4, which was why the parenthetical note, maybe for emphasis, doesn't matter. I mean, sentence form is fine. And, I mean, the way it's worded is the way I remember it, which is we had concerns about supporting the bulk data use cases and having developers going off and doing different things at different levels of standard. And
right,
I know we take it as a major argument for R4.
Okay.
Was there a comment somewhere earlier about not doing the population level things in this requirement? I thought I saw that somewhere in the recommendations earlier. About sticking it per patient. Did that recommendation get removed? Or we might be contradictory if we say somewhere we should only do per patient things in this.
Oh, no. We didn't make that recommendation.
You did not.
No, I don't recall that.
No.
Yeah.
So what
I think we were using that as an art. Yeah. I'll be quiet.
So on this, let me go back, has concerns over. Recommends. Oh, well, we could say here recommends ONC specify a standard approach and adopting Fire Release 4 in the regulation would address this concern.
I guess the
so
big picture
that,
are the,
pardon,
big picture, I guess I had thought bulk data was still pretty early in the process. I know we had one of our folks look at trying to use it for some of the things we're doing for population health management, and we concluded it was too immature to start adopting for real use. I guess, are there folks who've been engaged who feel comfortable that bulk data is mature enough to really specify and say everyone should do this?
Well, Ken, I think it definitely has a lower degree of maturity and adoption than other uses of FHIR. Because in part there isn't even a standard way to do the bulk access until Release 4, I believe, and no one's using Release 4 because it was like just balloted recently, or is about to be balloted. I'm blanking on the details. So it's something that I think people are looking toward in the future, but I don't think it has real world use yet. I know that there was like a demo of some of the prototypes using the bulk data at ONC's interoperability event last year. And it seemed, as you say, to me, that demonstration seemed to indicate to me it was very early on in its development. And so I think there's kind of a balancing act here. Some people have been giving feedback, even in our past discussions, that the bulk data use case is critically important. But at the same time, it is clearly further from prime time than like the single patient use case, and potentially worth putting on a different timeline.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm always nervous about recommending everyone's required to use a standard. No one's even really tried in a real setting yet. That would be my only concern. And I guess recommendation-wise, it might be to maybe say, you know, I know consider doesn't mean, but like, I don't know, take into account the current maturity of bulk data, perhaps. But I felt like it was primarily a standard to say if you wanted to grab everyone, or like a, you know, very coarse-grained population to pull, that's how you do it, was sort of my sense. Not anything like, you know, for these particular populations, I want to know their weights and A1Cs kind of thing. So I can just imagine this would be a very expensive computational process too, if we say, if we don't have those fine-grained features, et cetera. So I don't know. I'm always nervous about things that are only like tested in a demo environment because, you know, demos will always work.
So rather than us trying to make a final decision on this, since we only have a few minutes and we will have to go to public comment, I think probably we should defer resolving recommendation 20 on Friday. I will say that a number, there seemed to be a lot of confusion on the rule amongst some CIOs I talked to. They were kind of mixing up this API requirement for multiple patients versus individual patients, and that these requirements required any data, and I had to help explain to them that this is around it starting with the US CDI, and that it's the EHI export, which is a different requirement that requires all of the data, and that wasn't via API. So I just wanted to bring that up, that out in the field, there's some confusion on all of this. If we don't think the standard's going to be ready, or there's a chance it might not be, we might want to think about adjusting our recommendation and then conclude on that discussion on Friday.
Now that sounds good.
Do we go to public? Are we due to go to public comment now, Lauren?
Yep, we are just about at time. So, operator, can you open the line?
Yes, thank you.
And then,
I'm sorry, please go ahead.
And then I was going to say after we do this, we'll do a little summary and what we're going to cover on Friday.
If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad and confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Okay, and let's see, do we have any comments in the queue?
Not at this time.
Okay, great. Denise, I'll hand it back to you.
All right, so in my notes, I see that, so we have to conclude our discussion on recommendation 20. We also had some discussion that we needed to have on recommendation 22 relating to app registration, recommendation 27 related to the e-prescribing, and then one other final is whether we want to make any recommendation regarding self-developers or just make a statement that that we agree that the conditions of maintenance and certification apply equally to self-developers. And if you'll all look on the bottom of this document as part of your homework on page 13, there's a 4 items related to not just self-developers, but all developers. But it does clarify some things related to what we expect with self-developers. So Raj will be running the meeting on Friday because I will be in an airplane. But I think our goal, Raj, by the end of the meeting Friday, is to be able to advance the letter to the high-tech committee that includes all of our recommendations for the overall committee to vote on. if possible.
Yeah, I deliberately put it Friday afternoon, knowing that everybody would want to make it to happy hour, so people will be efficient.
And I may have missed some areas, and now, Sasha, you're back from your trip, so if everybody can take a look at the version we've been working in today, because that one includes the comments. Kate has transferred everything over as far as what we've done up to today, but not including today. But she's going to move those items over that we've already deliberated on.
So this 3.12 version is the one to put further comments into and do our homework in.
I would say so. In that way, Kate can keep her our letter clean, and we're not making a bunch of changes to that. She can then transfer the changes over. Does that sound good, Kate?
Yeah, that works.
Okay.
Kate, can you send out that link wherever you'd like us to make the comments so we are sure we get that right?
Yep. Yes, I'll send that out.
All right. Anything else we want to do in the last minute or so? Or are we at time? I lost my clock here. Oh, we have 3 minutes.
I think we're good to hold a Friday if that works for everybody.
That sounds good.
All right.
Just a quick suggestion. If anyone has access to folks who have tried the fire bulk data, at the organizations, et cetera, if they could ask and get their input for Friday, that would be really useful.
Ken, I would suggest that we probably ought to get them on the agenda for the full HITAC, because that seems like a pretty advanced capability.
That's true, yeah. I don't know who are the folks engaged, but if the ONC folks know,
I think that we should kick this up and say the HITAC should discuss the readiness of the bulk data for OSPECT. This is clearly at the centerpiece of what's going on. And if we're saying it's got to be ready in 2 years and there's not a lot of implementations of it, it's not really something that's been specified with the design that an EHR performance, could meet the request for this without a heavy load on it, right, computationally. I don't know what you think it would do to your system, Ken, to ask for the records of 10,000 patients during, at 4.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just note that sometimes when we just want to pull one typical patient's medication data, it can take like 10 seconds. So yeah.
Yeah. And this may be something that has to be maybe near real time and not real time. There's got to be consideration for the burden on the infrastructure and the system and the I have concerns. I mean, I know we're only talking about a subset of data for the USCDI, but when you're talking 10,000 patients for a subset of data and it takes 10 seconds to just get the med data on one patient, maybe this requirement just needs to be held for a future date. I just don't like the idea of even all the developers using whatever approach they think is best. That just drives us further away from having standards and around interoperability. So
I think the only time for the question might be whether to invite somebody for next week's HITAC, so maybe ONC can consider whether that might be appropriate.
I'll leave that up to Lauren and Kate to investigate.
Yeah, Kate, we can talk online and see if that's possible for next week.
That's great.
Because I know it's going to be a concern. I mean, it did come up at the last HITAC. There was concerns about this particular requirement, and it would be helpful probably for us as a committee to be able to make a decision on this by hearing from a subject matter expert that can speak to actual real use of this. All right, we're at the top of the hour. and to be respectful of everybody's time, I think we're ready to conclude.
Thank you.
Thank
Great.
You.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
All right, and we'll
Thank
dial
you.
In Raj and I for a debrief.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.